Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Good Saturday morning. As always, it is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, along with our guest today. She's coming back. She came back, you know, even though we give her a hard time sometimes. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Welcome back, Michelle.
Thanks. Third time's a charm, I think.
I think it is. And by that, I mean, we ask tough questions of you, so.
Yeah, sometimes I get a little stumped, but it's definitely humbling sometimes when you're here trying to remember all the things. So I look forward to the questions today.
Well, you've done a great job so far, and we appreciate your time. It is at your service, and so we are helping you out by providing a phone number you can call in to ask your question. You know, we're getting to the end of the year, but before you know it, spring will be here. And garden time will be here. And so we're going to go over some winter stuff and then get to some spring thoughts as well. And what not to do. We'll get into that. But the number to call is 314-436-7900. You can also call our 800 number. You do have to dial the 1 if you're out of the St. Louis area. 1-800-925-1120. Again, the local number, 314-436-7900. Michelle, I'd like to start with poinsettias. You know, obviously, they're everywhere in the stores. I mean, I was in Home Depot this week, and there's just hundreds of them. And people, it's a popular thing to give over the holidays. I'm not asking you to give me the history of poinsettias and why we give them at Christmas, but what actually is a poinsettia?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you're not asking about the history of why we give them. At Christmas time, I would have to make up something. And I would assume it has something to do with the red foliage. And it is foliage. I think a lot of people confuse the red or whatever color. There's a lot of different varieties now, like white ones and pink ones. But the foliage is actually the color, and the flower is actually really little, and you can't often see it. It's a little bitty yellow flower. So I always thought that was interesting whenever I learned that. But yeah, people buy thousands or millions, I guess, across the country, and they are they're native to Mexico and Central America. And it's actually interesting because they're kind of considered weedy almost.
Yeah.
So they're everywhere. They pop up all over the place. And even though they're not hardy here, if you leave them outside here, they die back. But down In Mexico and Central America, they will grow, and they're actually shrubs and trees. They get woody, and they get huge. And it's actually quite a different plant when you think about it in its native habitat and how far it is from what that is to what we do to it by sticking it in little festive pots at Christmas time.
Yeah, it's kind of funny the traditions that we have around holidays, and we can go over lots of those things, but a lot of them do revolve around plants.
Yeah, there is a ton. I mean, you think about it, Christmas trees,
right,
and wreaths and all kinds of decorations and even things that we eat around Christmas time are related to plants. So, yeah, it is an interesting thing to think about. I might have to dig into that about the history of why we do all of these things with plants around Christmas. But, yeah, super cool, I think.
And it's also pretty funny that we say to someone, I'm really fond of you. Here's a weed in a pot.
Yeah.
It's hilarious to me. All right, 314-436-7900. Sue Marie, you are up first on the Garden Hotline.
Hi there. I live in Eureka, and I have a very challenging rock wall poured backyard. I do have a deer crossing from the pond up on both sides that I frequently see herds. So I give up on growing stuff that they like, and it's basically everything. So the nudge grass that I have in my narrow beds, when we poured the bed, I didn't really understand landscaping like I do a little bit now, and they're too narrow, so everything really dries up next to the concrete pad and the rock wall start. So I have like maybe 10 to 12 inches to work with, sometimes 18. And I have quite a bit of nudge grass. And I, God forbid, I use Roundup. I hate using chemicals, but I did because I'm so frustrated. I didn't get a chance to get back in there and dig that up. Now the weather is cold and frozen. So what is how can I get that looking better for the spring? Do I add more mulch? Leave it alone? That's my question.
It's a good question. So are you saying you have nut grass, like the weedy nut grass that's growing up in the beds?
Yes, ma'am.
So that is a really difficult weed to get rid of, especially just with Roundup. So it has these little rhizomes underground. So if you pull it out, it's kind of like a gray hair, they say. If you pull a gray hair, and seven of them grow back in its place. So if you leave any portion of that, even just a tiny little sliver, it will grow back from that little piece of root in the ground. And it also is a jerk and will spread by the seed. So if you let it go to seed, it will spread that way as well. So, you know, I know a lot of people are a little hesitant in using chemicals for weed removal or other things, but this is sometimes one that we have to go to a pesticide for. There are some selective herbicides that you can get at any of your garden centers or hardware stores, and it's specifically for nut grass. I think there's one called like Sedgehammer or something like that, but you specifically need to find one that is targeted for that particular weed. And it does take sometimes multiple applications. So, you know, you spray it once and wait a week or two or whatever the label says, and you'll need to kind of spray it again. And it could take two or three applications in order to kind of get those under control. It's interesting to me that you say it's a dry area because nut grass is often an indicator of overwatering. We see it a lot in our turf and places like that, but it can obviously grow. It's probably doing pretty good for you in those dry areas as well. So I think getting that under control when the weather warms up, it typically doesn't come. It's not one of the first weeds that we see in the springtime. It waits around. It likes that warmer, wetter temperature, so you'll probably see it more towards May, I would say. So when that comes back, you can start treating that. But in the meantime, a way to kind of help with weed suppression is to plant desirable plants or add mulch. So I would look for drought tolerant plants and things that would do well in some soil that's maybe not as lush and fertile as some other things. Grasses are a great option. There's some sedums and things like that, but definitely filling the space.
Yes, ma'am. One other question.
Okay, go ahead.
That's very interesting because there is a spring underneath our property, so I hear what you're saying. Okay, that's interesting. So I have an in-ground beehive this past season. I was growing pumpkins, and I think it kind of, I don't know, you know, I'm assuming stuff. But that beehive, I looked, and it looks like the remains there. Do you know anything about those? Do they I tried to look up information under beehives, but could you talk a little bit about that?
I actually don't have a lot of background with beehives, so I hate to tell you, but I don't think I can help you with that one.
Okay. Also, one other question. Could you tell us a little bit about your educational background or your experience I'm a Kansas State person, so I look for advice up there when I'm in that town. But if you could just talk about your background, because I see your company name all over the place. So, yeah.
Thanks so much, Sue Marie, for the questions. Really good ones. And I will get to her answer about her background right after the short break that we have to take. We also have a follow-up question on poinsettias. Much more to get to. The Garden Hotline on KMOX.
Stay connected with the heartbeat of St. Louis. KMOX News, bringing you the stories that matter most. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've known...
Yeah, it's kind of true. The weather outside is kind of frightful this morning. Lots of rain and dreariness, but it's a good time to talk about gardening, and that is what we're doing. The Garden Hotline on KMOX. The number to call to ask your question of Michelle Reeser West from Pointer Landscaping is 314-436-7900. Before the break, we had a caller who was asking a couple of really good questions, and one of them was about your background. So take it away, Michelle.
I just learned everything off the internet. No, I'm just joking. Horticulture was a second career for me. So I actually kind of had an opportunity to figure out, you know, after working in an office for 10 plus years and being miserable, I got to kind of explore some options. And I actually stumbled upon the horticulture program at St. Louis Community College at Merrimack. It's a two-year associate's degree. It's a great program. Even if you're not looking for a degree in horticulture, you can take classes one at a time. They have all kinds of stuff there that, you know, all the way from pest and disease to plant identification to, you know, just a regular old horticulture class or a soils class. So it's a pretty great program. You know, I really recommend when you're looking for some kind of a landscape professional that that could be one of the things that you look for is if they have a background in horticulture or what kind of degree that they have. And, you know, that doesn't mean that years and years of experience also doesn't add up. But it is a, you know, a good thing to kind of look for if you are looking for a designer or somebody to manage your gardens. But yeah, at Pointer, we have a lot of our people went through the program at Merrimack. We also have architects on staff that have gone to, you know, four-year universities. I think the caller said something about K-State. The program leader over at Merrimack actually, I think, went to K-State. It's a great horticulture program over there. But yeah, it's a great program. And if you're interested, you should definitely check it out.
Appreciate that information, and your expertise in many different areas has been obvious the previous couple of times you've been on the show. We have a follow-up question, a text from Liz, who asks about keeping poinsettias alive after the holidays.
Yeah, I love all these like houseplant questions. I am so good at keeping plants alive outside, but poinsettias I think are easy. I think one of the things that you should definitely start with is getting a good poinsettia from the store. So, you know, when you are picking it out, you're going to want to look for one that's really full and healthy looking. All the leaves are, you know, healthy looking. They aren't dropping leaves or curling or have any brown or spotting on it. So I think that's a great first step. When you take that thing home, it's in a cute little packaging with, you know, red or sparkly bits or whatever. And that's really great for a short-term thing. But if you are wanting to keep that poinsettia around for a longer time frame, you should definitely take all that packaging off and think about putting it in a larger pot or at least a different pot. The pots that they come in are just basically for growing and for short-term use. And if you leave all that packaging on and you water it, that water can kind of sit inside that wrapper and it doesn't drain away. And then the other thing after you've repotted it, definitely want to find some place sunny. As we talked about, it's native to Mexico and Central America, which it is really hot and sunny a lot of the time. So it likes warmer temperatures in your house. So if you can find a spot that's warmer, I mean, I think it could tolerate 50s, but it would probably prefer to be over 70. So a warm, sunny spot would be good. And that keeping it wet, poinsettias really do not like to dry out, even if it's just for a day or two and that pot, or that soil in the pot gets really dry. You'll definitely start to see some wilting. Those leaves will look kind of unhappy and sad. If it's not left too dry for too long, watering it, it can perk back up again. But definitely try to keep that water or the soil wet continuously.
Well, Liz was asking, in addition to the sun issue, do poinsettias need a period of darkness?
Not that I'm aware of. Because they are like any other shrubs or trees, it doesn't really need... Well, I guess the question is sunlight, right? So you definitely will need... All plants need to have, like, the sun is setting. Plants, it's not just about temperature when plants are going dormant outside. It's also about how long the light is around. So it needs to mimic what our natural sunlight is. You know, at the minimum, you know, we talk about full shade plants or full sun plants and how much sunlight they get. Full sun plants need a minimum of 6 hours plus, but you also do need to have, you know, a mimic of what the sun is naturally doing outside. So yes, I guess the answer to that question is yes, you definitely need to have some dark time for a few hours every day.
So after the sun goes down, you don't want to point a light at it.
Correct. And if you know, like when I set up my growing equipment over the winter for my spring garden and I'm trying to grow seeds, once those seeds germinate, you have to set your timer, your lighting timer, for a specific amount of time. You can't just leave it, you can't leave it on for 24 hours. They need kind of like a resting period.
I looked up the history of poinsettias and
yes.
Christmas. Of course
can't
I did.
Wait.
Okay, here we go. Poinsettias' association with Christmas began in 16th century Mexico. Legend tells of a girl, commonly called Pepita or Maria, who was too poor to provide a gift for the celebration of Jesus' birthday. Inspired by an angel to gather weeds, as we said, from the roadside and place them at the church altar. The weeds sprouted crimson blooms, turning them from weeds into beautiful poinsettias.
Look at that. That's a way better answer than what mine was. I just said because they were red. So
yeah, that's right.
I'm glad you looked that up. That's super interesting.
Yeah. 314-436-7900 is the garden hotline. Call in with your questions for Michelle Reeser-West of Pointer Landscaping. While we're on the Christmas theme, how about some ideas for Christmas gifts for gardeners?
Oh, that's a good one because I hope my mom is listening right now. Here's some great Christmas gifts for gardeners. So one of the things that I'm kind of nerdy about, it's one of my favorite tools, and it's the thing that I always ask other gardeners about, is what kind of pruners are you using? So I think that's a great start when you're a gardener. Sometimes you just pick up a set of pruners from the hardware store, and they maybe aren't the highest quality. But if you're really getting into to gardening, and that's becoming like a regular hobby for you, one of the things I love to recommend is getting a high quality pair of pruners. One of the go-to brands that I think a lot of professionals use is a Felco pruner. They're super high quality. They have all kinds of shapes and sizes. My personal favorite is called the Oketsune pruners. They're from Japan. They're a little more expensive than Felco's, but kind of worth the price if you're really getting into gardening and pruning.
Okay, maybe we'll come up with a couple more before the show is over, but we have to take a quick break. Get to your phone calls, 314-436-7900. We'll have Kathy up next, so stay with us on the line, and we'll get your question for Michelle Reeser-West on the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
Hi, it's Joe Pott from KMOX Sports, wishing you and your family a very happy and healthy holiday season.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
Happy holidays from all of us at KMOX. This is the Garden Hotline. Our guest today is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. This is her third appearance on the program. We've had great success so far with Michelle's answers, and your opportunity is right now to call in and ask your question. 314-436-7900. Are you planning for the spring? Are you doing some winterizing? If you have a question, let us know. We're going to go to the phones now. Kathy, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I didn't get my bulbs in, my daffodil bulbs I got at Costco, and I was wondering if I could still plant those in a pot inside or out. I looked at the directions, of course, and I was wondering, is it possible to do it inside or out in the sun?
Yeah, it. You definitely can still do that. If it's outside, daffodils definitely need to be outside in the cold for a while before they will bloom. So if you put them outside in a pot, you can put them in the ground. You still have plenty of time for that. If you want to try to force them inside, you can try to do that, but they do need to have a time of cold. So, you know, putting them outside for a while and then bringing them in will force them to bloom inside, but definitely still plenty of time for that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call, Kathy. 314-436-7900 is the phone number. Michelle, before the break, you were mentioning a couple of gift ideas, a couple of pruners. What else you got?
I think, you know, a lot of gardeners may already have this, but a great thing for a gardener is a membership to Mobot. You can give those as gifts. The Missouri Botanical Garden has memberships that you can purchase and give away as gifts.
That is actually a great gift. I've been a member before, and I really enjoyed the heck out of it because I could walk from my house to the garden, and I got a lot of use out of it. And it's not that expensive for a whole year for two people. It's $70 or something.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's a ridiculous, ridiculously cheap price for what you get. I mean, you know, you can get into the gardens, you get cheaper ticket prices for some of the events. There's like extended garden hours sometimes for members or member only events. So it's a great place. Even if you're just going a few times a year, a couple times a year, it's still very much worth it to me, especially if you're really into gardening.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Mike, you are up next with Michelle on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, Michelle. Good morning. I had a question. I planted some azalea bushes when I re-landscaped late summer. And the oddest thing, they kind of bloomed all fall. And is that going to bother them this winter?
It really shouldn't overall. We were seeing a ton of azaleas re-blooming around the St. Louis area this fall. And it could be a couple of different reasons. One of them could just be that, you know, that could be just a sign of stress. Depending on what variety you bought, some of them we quote-unquote call reblooming azaleas, and they will rebloom sporadically. The other thing that I suspect is happening with a lot of our azaleas and rhodies and really anything that blooms early in the spring is that those trees and shrubs will set their flower buds in the fall. And they overwinter on the plant, and then they open for us in the spring for the big spring show. That being said, we had really warm and a extended warm period in fall. So as those buds that are ready to open in the spring are sitting dormant on the plants, a lot of them took that opportunity to, you know, kind of open for us. So I think you may see a slightly less spectacular bloom, but it's probably not going to be anything noticeable in the spring because it was just a sporadic amount of buds that kind of broke open for us. So nothing that you should be concerned about for the long-term health of your plant. It was actually kind of just fun. I actually spent a lot of time taking pictures of all the random plants that were still in bloom or that were randomly blooming at these incorrect times. But I don't think you'll see a problem in the spring.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. It was pretty looking at the blooms all fall, though. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for the question, Mike. You can get your question in at 314-436-7900. I was thinking a good topic might be, what are some things not to do at this time of year when you're thinking about we're going into the new year, spring is coming, winterization and all that stuff? What are some things not to do?
Definitely the first thing that pops into my brain if we're talking about timely things not to do this time of year, is the first thing is definitely pruning. I think you should try to avoid any urge to prune almost anything right now. Definitely evergreens. It's kind of past the time to do that safely. We don't want to prune evergreens at this time of year because, you know, we live in St. Louis. So, I mean, this weekend we're supposed to be back up to almost 60 degrees again. So, you know, if you prune those plants and we have a warm time, then those plants may flush out new growth and then it gets cold again. And that would cause some winter damage to those plants, and that kind of opens things up to pest and disease issues. It also looks bad. You know, if you have all that fresh new growth and then it turns bad, turns brown, you have to look at it all winter. and then the other thing is kind of like what we were just talking about. A lot of plants right now have buds on them for next spring. So if you prune right now, while it isn't, you know, horticulturally, that's not super bad for the plants. But if you prune right now, and you have a shrub like lilacs or azaleas or cherry trees or things like that, you're pruning off all of those flower buds for the spring. So your plant would survive that. It's not going to hurt the health of those types of woody plants, but you will just be cutting off most likely the thing that you bought the plant for, which is the flowers. So pruning right now, it's just really not a great time for most pruning, just letting things kind of go dormant and do their thing. And, you know, in February, late February, early March, kind of before everything starts waking up, we can start doing some pruning again. But right now, that would be the kind of the number one thing that I would say don't do right now.
We might revisit this subject later in the show, as well as Christmas gift ideas for gardeners. We're kind of going through some of them as we go along on this Saturday morning. We'll get to your phone calls next. Again, the number is 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We are back with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, taking your questions this morning at 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones. Jim, you are up next.
Yes. I hope I didn't mess up. I took my pruners and I went all the way down. I followed the older canes on a lilac tree or bush, and I took it all the way to the ground and cut them off, like on the inside of the branches coming up. Is that going to hurt it?
No, you're just talking about the suckers coming up from the base. You didn't prune.
No, it was like a main, it was like, you know, they got like, it's got like maybe
five, six, seven main branches coming up. I went into the center of it. The ones looked kind of bad. They were still producing, but I mean, the wood was looking really bad. So I cut it all the way down to the ground.
No, I don't think that's going to, for the health of the plant, that's actually, really good. Every year we talk about, making some thinning cuts, especially to something like a lilac, which does get some pest and disease issues, especially fungal issues that are from, part of the problem with that is air circulation. So thinning out some of those older branches is fine. When I was talking about before the break and pruning, it will remove some of the buds for next year. But it actually won't do anything if you're pruning that now. It's not going to hurt the overall health of the plant. And, like I said, making those thinning cuts and getting out some of that older wood every year is actually quite healthy for a lilac.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. You didn't mess up. All right. Lynn, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about my junipers. I have been getting cedar apple rust galls on them, and I pull them off manually. Is there anything else I can do to prevent that from happening?
Lynn, I think you know the answer to that question. Lynn and I used to work together back in the day, so thanks for calling in and asking about that. Those little guys are kind of pesky, and they are kind of gross looking, but they're also kind of cool. So she's talking about cedar apple rust galls, and they're very common on our junipers and some other plants. But you basically need to, it's a fungus, and you need something in, like a juniper, and then you need something in the Asteraceae family, which is things like hawthorns or quince or apple trees. And they're two host plants, and they need each other in order to survive. And they kind of the spores kind of travel through the air, and they look different on the host plant. They look on a juniper, they look like these weird little alien brains. And then in the springtime, the spores kind of open up and they shoot out these slimy orange stringy things. And a lot of people, we always get a ton of calls for these in the springtime. What's growing on my juniper? They actually, to me, are super cool looking. Like I said, they're kind of alien. Like there's nothing else like them that we see around. They're mostly not super harmful to your trees. If it's a huge infestation, you can have problems long term, and they could, your plant could decline. But like Lynn was saying, she picks them off, and that's typically what we recommend. Anytime you see this time of year, they just look like these little brown balls on the tips of your branches. So you can either pull them off by hand or use your pruners that you got for Christmas, hopefully, to cut those off. And anytime you see them, you just got to kind of pull them off. It can be sprayed. Most arborists or most horticulturists say that that's not the best way to treat them. It's really just manually removing them. Or you could just enjoy them and look at that weird, funky orange stuff on the trees. But, Lynn, I'm so happy to hear your voice, and thank you for calling in. I miss you, friend.
Oh, this is an awesome show. You're doing a great job. I love it.
Thank you.
I absolutely love it. I do have another question for you, though.
Go for it.
If I decide to move these junipers, when is the best time to do it?
I think fall is a great time for moving evergreens. I think you still have a little bit of time if you want to do it now. You want to do it when it's cool. And part of why we plant in the fall is that, we don't have all that heat around. We typically have a lot of moisture and rainfall. So fall, I mean, we still have probably a couple more weeks of good planting season where the ground is not frozen. If you don't get it in this fall, you can definitely do it early spring, kind of when the ground is thawing out. And you want to do it before things start heating up. So plenty of time for that plant to get rooted in and do its thing before the heat and the drier temperatures get here. But whenever you do it, just make sure that you're watering. You get a really good root ball, so it has lots of roots to grow after you transplant it.
Okay. Well, Michelle did a beautiful job in my yard, and I just want to tell her thank you. It is spectacular.
Thanks, Lynn.
Mm-hmm. I miss you.
Thanks for calling in, Lynn, at 314-436-7900. Let's go next to Kristen. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for keeping the Garden Hotline going. It really helps me with my garden questions.
Good.
I want to know, I have a row of hazelnut bushes, and so that I get the best growth of the nuts, they do get too tall, and I do need to trim them back some. Is that a, like, in the dead of winter thing, or when should I do that so that I get the maximum nuts off of them?
That is a great question, and I don't know a ton about hazelnuts, but I do know about pruning. So we kind of been talking a little bit about it. I suspect that those hazelnuts are flowering in the spring, and then they are setting the seeds and growing the nuts throughout the year. So all of these kinds of fruit trees or nut trees, you can do some dormant pruning on. And then after they fruit or after they flower, you can do do another pruning. So I think that would be my best guess for you. There's also a lot of really great online resources for pruning, especially for fruit and nut producing trees. Stark Brothers Nursery is a Missouri company. They sell fruit and nut trees. They have a lot of really great information on caring and pruning for your edible trees. And then Seed St. Louis is a local organization. They do a lot of urban farming and gardening and things like that. And they also have some classes, I believe, coming up in January or February on pruning your fruit trees and your nut trees. So that's another great resource.
Well, thanks for taking my call. That was really helpful. Have a great day.
You too.
You too, Kristen. Thank you for calling in. We are going to take a break for news at the top of the hour and then get back to your phone call. So if you've called in already, just have to wait a few minutes. We'll get your question on the air with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. The number to call if you want to join is 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Maybe this Christmas will mean something more. Maybe this year, love will appear.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Today's guest answering your gardening questions is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. The number is 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones. Mitchell has been waiting patiently to ask a question. You're up, Mitchell.
Hi, Michelle. I have a question. I had a tree cut down in my front yard, a very large tree, and I went out, and so I have a stump. So I went out and got a very large pot, very large, and placed potting soil and then annual flowers in it. But now, since it's coming off winter, the plants are dead or just about dead. And so I'm wondering what to do with all that dirt in the pot and the plants, I guess, I need to take out of there. Must I remove all that potting soil or can I leave it in there?
You can definitely, well, let's start with what kind of pot is it? What is the material made out of?
It's a metal pot that I placed some off in so that the dirt wouldn't fall out of it. And yeah, it's just a big metal round pot, but it has no bottom to it. So I placed a tarp underneath it so I can retain most of the dirt without it running out when I watered it.
Yes.
So that's what it is, a big metal round pot without a bottom.
Yeah, so you can definitely leave all that soil in it. You don't need to clean it out. You know, a lot of people, you should, you know, clean out all that plant material that you had in over the summer or even the fall and get that out of there. Some people will put like a small amount of mulch on the top. You don't need to do that. It's really more of an aesthetic thing. Some people, if the pot is small enough or manageable enough, some people will lay their pots over on the side That helps with the freezing and drainage and the water that's stored in there. But you definitely don't need to do that. I don't personally do that at my house. I clean out all the plant material and leave it be for the winter. But especially with a metal container, you're not going to have to worry about, a lot of times a terracotta pot or some other types of pots, I recommend removing the soil from, just because of that moisture. Terracotta should really be brought inside to protect it from cracking or things like that. But your metal container, even some people have plastic or fiberglass. And then there's some glazed pots that are rated for winter temperatures that you don't need to bring in. But you should be fine leaving that soil in over the winter.
Well, you're a lifesaver on that because I thought I had to dig. It's a very large pot. Last question on that. How did I revitalize that dirt then when spring comes?
So depending on the quality of potting soil that you have, you probably don't need to do much next year if you just filled it up. We do recommend every two or three seasons that you remove kind of the top portion and put some new potting soil in, or you take out a little bit and add in some kind of organic material. And if you're keeping something in it, like a lot of people will put in like an evergreen or something to keep in it all the time, you definitely want to try to amend that soil when you can. A lot of times it gets hard because the plants will get kind of root bound in there. But yeah, definitely every two or three seasons you want to take some of that soil out and put some fresh stuff in between seasons.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mitchell. The number is 314-436-7900. Sherry, you're up next for Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. I've always wanted to do compost from kitchen scraps, and I wanted to know, how do I get started and when can I use it for a vegetable garden?
So there are a couple of different things that you can do with starting a compost. I like to recommend, especially for people that are new to it, to buy some kind of a composting system. They have all kinds of really inexpensive, they're kind of like barrels on stands, especially if you're not making a ton of it. That's a great way to start. And you're able to kind of put it close to your house. And that's also another recommendation, because you're using kitchen scraps and things like that. You don't want to put it all the way at the back of your yard. You're less likely to walk out there on a cold day or even a hot day or a rainy day. So, relatively close to your home. So it's easy access. But when you use those barrel type composters, it's easy to turn. The traditional compost bins where you have three separate compartments, you have to get out there with a pitchfork and it's heavy and it's hard work. And then your compost doesn't always turn out or process as fast because you're not out there doing all that physical labor. So at my house, I like to use those barrel composters. That also breaks down your stuff really quickly. I think mine typically breaks down within a few months. And I'm able to use it more frequently. So for a new composter, that's definitely the route that I would suggest.
And how soon can I use it in the garden? I mean, do I start the first part of spring using it in the vegetable garden?
It typically takes a few months for it to break down. Especially in the winter, if you started it now, it's not breaking down as fast as it would over the summer months when it's warmer. But typically you can start putting stuff in, and within a few months you should be able to use it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Sherry. Up next, we have Debbie. You are on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. I got a question. I know that you already said what kind of pruners you'd buy for a Christmas gift, and I missed that. Could you please repeat that?
Absolutely. I love talking about pruners. So the go-to for a lot of gardeners, a professional quality pruner is a Felco. F-E-L-C-O, and those are available at most of your garden centers. We'll carry those. They typically start around $40, but they can get more expensive depending on what kind you get. And again, they have different shapes and sizes. They have different models that fit women's hands that are a little smaller. They have some ergonomic ones where the handle kind of twists a little bit if you're doing it like as a profession. You know, we have to worry about things like carpal tunnel and things like that when we're pruning. So there are some more expensive ones, but Felco is really kind of the go-to brand in pruners if you're going to take that next step from, you know, your hardware store variety. The kind that I said that I prefer, it's a little bit more expensive. I think they're around $100 for a pair, are called Oketsune. That's O-K-A-T-S-U-N-E, I think is how you spell it, but it's a Japanese brand. And they have, they're very distinct. They have like a red and white handle, but one of the things about Felco that people like is they have replaceable blades. So when your blade gets dull, you can just put a new blade on it. The Oketsune are not able, you're not able to switch that blade. You have to sharpen it yourself. So that is kind of a difference between those two. But Felco is a great step up.
That's awesome. May I ask you real quick, and then I know you got lots of people waiting, but how about those garden soil knives? Do you like those?
Oh, yes. That is my second favorite gardening tool. They are super, super handy. For those of you that don't know what they are, they're kind of like a trowel, but it's like multi-use. It's skinnier than a trowel. It's a little bit longer. They're like 6 or 7 inches. One side has kind of like a sharp blade. And actually, I have to be careful with it. My very first day of gardening professionally, I was handed a pair of pruners and a soil knife and a little leather holster to put it in. And as I put that soil knife into my holster, I cut my finger pretty bad. So they are very sharp. And then on the opposite side of that knife edge, there's a serrated edge that's really helpful if you're cutting through roots or if you need to cut open a bag of potting soil. And then they also have like a little hook on it that makes it easy to cut twine or things like that. But I would recommend getting one. There's a lot of them that have a bright orange handle, bright pink handle. So easy to lose your tools when you're out playing in the dirt. So if you get one of them with the orange handle, that's super helpful, especially if you're a little ADD like me. So totally recommend those. I think it's 100% worth it. I also think it's worth it to go ahead and buy that holster. There's one that just holds your soil knife or one that just holds your pruners, or you can get one that holds both, but it helps with keeping your tools right there with you, and it just kind of fits on your belt and it's always there. But those are my two go-to tools I always recommend to people: soil knife and a pruner.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate this show.
Thank you, Debbie, for calling in. The number is 314-436-7900. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here. She is geeking out on gardening tools, and that's what we're here for. We are here for all of it. We will get to your the next round of questions after a short break, so stay tuned and stay with us.
Diverse opinions, mutual respect. That's the politics you'll find at KMOX. Your connection to St. Louis and the region.
The mood is right, the spirit's up.
Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy to be joined this week by Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your questions this morning at 314-436-7900. Next, let's go to Steve. Hello. Hello, Steve.
Yeah,
there?
I have. Yeah, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Yep. Go on.
I have some dwarf orange trees in the sunroom, and at night, when it's really cold, it'll get down to about 45 degrees in there. I still got heat in there, but it'll get to 45. Will they be all right in there through the winter?
Yeah, they will be okay in there. They just can't freeze, so they would prefer, you know, a little bit warmer overnight temperatures than that. But, you know, if you think about California and Florida and other places where they're growing, they do get some cooler overnight temperatures. So as long as it's not freezing, it should be fine. In fact, my parents bring theirs in and keep them in a garage. It is a heated garage, but it stays pretty cold in there, and they do just fine. So I don't think that should be a problem for you.
Okay. Well, they're on the south side of the sunroom where they get a lot of sun.
That sounds
during the
perfect.
Day.
Yep, a lot of sunlight, and don't let them freeze.
Okay, thank you very much then.
Thanks so much for the call, Steve. Up next, we have Mary Beth. You're on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. I do a lot of baking at this time of year, so I have a lot of eggshells, and I have heard that they're full of nutrients. Can I crush those up and put them in my garden to help fertilize?
Yeah, I mean, people do that all the time. I think that it's best, and don't quote me on it, but I think that if you put them in your oven and really get them dried out, and then you're able to kind of crush them down into some smaller bits, that's the best way to do it. So it's almost like a powder when you put it out there. It's also fine to just let them dry out naturally and get them to be the smallest little pieces that you can get them to be, and then kind of mix them into your soil. If you do have a composting system, they're great to put in your compost as well, and they'll break down over time. But as small as you can get the pieces, I think, is the best for the soil.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Mary Beth. Up next, we have Joan. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I'm calling about my hibiscus trees. I brought them in early November. And this is the second year I've winterized them. They've done well. My question is, can I continue to fertilize them? They are blooming. They're in a southern exposure. I'm losing some of the leaves that are turning yellow, but I'm getting all these new blooms. It's spectacular. So I'm just wondering, should I be fertilizing them?
Yeah, you definitely can. I would just, recommend that you're following whatever instructions on the packaging. There's so many different kinds of fertilizers. There's some specifically for, indoor use, and, something like that liquid Miracle-Gro that you get and you stick it in water. Those they recommend doing, one or two times a month, depending on the type of plant. But just okay. Remember, anytime you're fertilizing a plant, you're asking it to grow or you're wanting it to grow. So if it's a type of plant that you're just trying to, help it through the winter, it's going to go dormant, then maybe you don't need to fertilize it as regularly. But yeah, I think it definitely wouldn't hurt. And then it sounds like you've had it in a pot for a couple of years. You might think about by the time spring rolls around to, I don't know if you switch out your pots or change out your soil or anything, but every few years you should definitely take it out of that pot, upsize it if you can put it in a bigger pot, and that'll really help it out year to year.
Okay. I'm just so happy how hardy it is. It looks beautiful. And I've got it decorated with Christmas lights and everything.
Oh, that's amazing. I love hearing that.
Well, great. Thank you so much. Appreciate the service.
You're welcome, Joan, and we appreciate you taking advantage of it at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Ken. Good morning. You're on with Michelle.
Yes, good morning. Enjoy listening to your show. I've got two questions for you this morning. Number one, we have an asparagus patch. The stalks are dying down back now. When can I cut them off? And what should I do with that patch? Can I mulch it or just let it go?
Yeah, right now is a great time to be cutting it back. So you just want to cut it all the way to the ground, and then asparagus likes to be covered up. So 12 inches of straw or like some kind of a light mulch would be perfect to get it through the winter.
Great. My other question, we had on the south side of our house, we had two holly bushes. The one's doing fabulous and the other one died. And I don't, I know it's hard to figure out why, I guess, but could we take cuttings off of the one that's still living and start another one or not? Or should we start with new plants?
I mean, you can certainly try. Sometimes woodies are a little bit difficult to try to get from cuttings on their own, but I think that it might be worth the effort to, you know, a little science experiment over the winter. But I would definitely, if you don't already have some, get some kind of a rooting hormone. You can get it, again, at your gardening center or hardware store. They typically have, it's a little powder, so when you take your cutting, you can kind of dip the end of the branch into that, and it helps to promote root growth. So that's kind of the best way to try it. But, you know, it's never a guarantee, but it's always kind of a fun little experiment, especially over the winter. It gives you something to do with your plants.
Now, do I set that in water or soil?
If you're going to use that rooting hormone, I would put it into soil.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks so much for your call, Ken. We appreciate it this morning. Up next, we have Jim. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. So my daughter gave me a Meyer lemon plant. It's about 12 inches tall. There's one bloom on it. And yesterday I noticed what I think are spider mites, real fine, fine webs. And with the magnifying glass, I can see a tiny white bug marching on the green leaves. So what do these bugs do to my plant, and how can I get rid of them?
So spider mites are sometimes hard to get rid of. A couple of things that you said that don't quite add up for me. The web is definitely spider mite. Spider mites don't tend to be white. One of the things that you can do to see if it is a spider mite is take like a white piece of paper and hold it underneath the plant, kind of shake it off. And then you can either use like a little magnifying glass to look for them, or you can kind of swipe your hand across the surface of that paper. And if you see brown little streaks, those are most likely spider mites. White bugs can be a number of other types of bugs, and they can also be a problem. What I would start with is a product called neem oil. It's an organic insecticide, and it also works as a fungicide. That's typically the first step that I go to with trying to get rid of pests. So that's kind of what I would start with. There are other products out there that you could get, like a specific miticide or an insecticide that says that it works with mites. It is a little bit more difficult to kill those mites, so you have to get a more specific product sometimes. But a lot of times, if it's just a small infestation, that's what we start with, neem oil. And if you're bringing plants inside from outside, it's always a great idea to kind of either spray them off with the hose, try to get those pests off, or spray everything down with that neem oil, and make sure you're getting the underside of the leaves, not just the top of the leaves, because they do kind of live down there below. So that's what you need to do.
So the neem oil can be sprayed on?
Correct.
You don't have to paint it on each leaf?
That's correct.
Okay, well, will these bugs kill my plant then?
They won't kill your plant. Over time, if it becomes a big infestation, your plant will start declining. We see a lot of that in our outdoor plants. But yeah, I mean, it causes your plant to drop leaves. And over time, if the problem persists, that if they drop enough leaves, then your plant can die.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, thanks for the advice.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jim. The number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. That is your opportunity to ask a question of Michelle. We will continue with your phone calls in just a moment, so stay tuned to the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, it's Chris Ranji from the Chris and Amy Show. Remember, socks really are not that bad of a gift. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and thanks for listening.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
Hey,
It is a holiday edition of the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow, and we have Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping here to answer your questions on the hotline, which is 314-436-7900. Marnie has been waiting patiently. You are up next. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I have a question. I have a new home, and I've gone to a local nursery that supposedly has a good reputation to give me a landscape plan. However, I was very disappointed because they basically used three plants and just alternated them. There was no variation in height. It was all one level, and there was no winter interest. Everything was deciduous. So what questions do I need to ask, or is there a website I can go to ask more intelligent questions to get a plan I like?
I actually think that's a really, really good question. You know, it's sometimes an interesting thing to call up, you know, a contractor or designer or something like that. And I think one of the best things that you can do is get really clear on what you want. You know, the things that you just said to me were really key. I heard winter interest. I heard variety. I heard, you know, a lot of things. So, you know, those types of things are super important. When we get somebody calling in to say we want a landscape design, you know, finding out what our clients need is kind of, you know, it to have that conversation. What are your likes? What are your dislikes? So when you're calling up somebody to talk about a design, I think having those kinds of things on the top of your mind is good. The other thing that is helpful for a designer when designing your yard is to maybe have a couple of pictures of landscapes that you've seen around town or landscapes that you've seen, you know, in a magazine or on a website. You know, sometimes the language between a designer and a homeowner isn't always the same, right? A designer talks sometimes in Latin names and all of these other things. So, and the homeowner just doesn't always know how to express, you know, what looks they're going for. So one of the things that is helpful that kind of connects those two can be photographs. You know, a lot of, I don't know, you know, about designers at nurseries. I've not worked in that capacity or worked with them. I think, you know, finding a designer that you can ask for samples of their work. I know when we have people call in about designs and, you know, we think we have a project maybe that's similar to what they're going for, we may be able to show pictures of that to the client. We may be able to even have a client let us come by and look at that. So, you know, having those types of things, looking at the website of a designer, almost everybody has websites now or Instagrams or things like that. So kind of looking at what the style of that designer is. Every designer has their own aesthetic. You know, like it's always kind of one of those things for me when I'm designing, there's like what my company wants, what the client wants, what I want aesthetically. So it's always kind of blending all of those things. Also, you know, like I meet with a lot of people for design, and I've met with a lot of contractors for things at my home, but I think having them come there and see your space.
Well, they did come.
Yeah.
They did come twice and look around, and I gave them a list of plants I wanted included.
Yep.
Those I didn't want included, like knockout roses,
sure,
because I have such Japanese beetle problems.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, why fight it? Let's just avoid that and use something else. And that was part of what it was a lot of knockout roses. And I thought, did you not hear what I said? And I wrote it down so I thought they could reread it, but I was just very disappointed.
Yeah, and unfortunately that happens. I'm sorry that that happened to you. You know, a lot of times I tell people it's also kind of about the vibe. If you have somebody that shows up to your house that you're, it's a, you know, an artistic process. It's also, you know, very subjective, right? Like what one person thinks is a good design, somebody else might think is, you know, not good. So again, having photographs from that designer of other projects that they've worked on, seeing the design, not just photographs, but seeing the drawing of what they're thinking about before they install it. When we do a design, we will, you know, do that drawing on a piece of paper. I also try to give pictures of the plants that I'm suggesting, because it doesn't always come through when you're looking at that design on a flat piece of paper and I've just drawn some circles there. It doesn't always, you know, like correlate or you know, those expectations of what you're thinking and what I'm thinking and looking at a piece of paper, those don't always go together. So I think photos is really the best way, and also just getting a good feeling with the person that comes over, and, you know, maybe getting multiple people to come over and picking, you know, the person that you think fits well with what you're going for.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good place to start. And thank you for your opinion. I appreciate it. I'll try again.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for the call, Marty. Last round coming up with your questions on the Garden Hotline for Michelle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks for tuning in. We have Michelle Reeser-West. She is from Pointer Landscaping answering your questions this morning. We're on the last lightning round. Let's go to Lenny up next. Good morning.
Hi, Scott, Michelle. Good morning. I got one question, and then Marnie, who just previously called, I'd like to piggyback off of what she said or ask. First thing is, I got a cherry tree, and she's an old girl. She's about to die. And over the last couple of years, me and a couple of buddies and even a seventh grade biology class were trying to grow a new tree from the seeds. We've tried air grafting, everything. Do you get any tips on how to do that?
I would like to tell you some tips, but I haven't done a lot of grafting or a lot of things, you know, with growing from cuttings or things like that. Again, a great resource for that online could be Stark Brothers. They do a lot with cherry trees, fruit trees, things like that, and grafting. I wish I could tell you some secret to doing that, but I know that it can be difficult.
Okay. And then the other thing, going off of what Marnie said, I'm what you would call a tweener, as far as I'm better than your average Joe, just homeowner, but I'm not quite a pro as far as landscaping. And I'm having a hard time finding designers that, if you go to one that's nursery centric, they want you to buy their product. If you go to one that's a landscaping centric, they want you to do the labor. Well, I like picking my own plants from various places, you know, when I have materials that I can, you know, do my own labor. So how do you find somebody who just, that you could like hire like a lawyer or a CPA or something that just bills out, you know?
As far as design goes or
as far as design goes, yes.
I think, you know, there are a lot of designers that's all they're doing. You can just hire them for design work. Even at my company, we prefer to do a design build situation, but we can and will do just the design consultation. And I know that there are a lot. I think calling around or just looking for a designer and being specific from the front, saying, I just want the design only, and I'm willing to do my own labor. I think that's the way to go. But I think there are a lot of people around that would just do the design only.
All right, Lenny, thank you for the call this morning. Let's go next to Frank. Frank, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I only have two comments. One with spider mites, and I was in the business and did a lot of spraying, and they keep coming back. And then it occurred to me, or someone told me,
using a miticide without an ovicide is not going to do anything for you. You'll be fighting these things every 10 days. And I got a scope and looked, and those mites, when you look at that leaf under a real good scope, there's all kinds of eggs there. So you killed the adult mite, and 10 days later, you got a new infestation. So a miticide with an ovicide. The other thing, just quickly, when it comes to feeding insects, especially bagworms, everybody says you can't kill them. There's a product I always use called Orthane. It's got a caution label on it. You can spray fruits, vegetables, any kind of edibles, wash them off, and they're good. And now I'll just shut up and see if you've had any feedback or if you know about these products.
Thanks for calling in, Frank. Any comments there, Michelle?
Yeah, I think you make a great point with the spider mites. They are very hard to control, and part of it is that egg. Anytime you're doing any kind of spraying, it is good to kind of, use multiple products or switch between products. All of these insects have a life cycle. So figuring out what that life cycle is and treating according to that life cycle is going to help in eradicating any kind of pest and disease. And as far as the bagworms go, I've not heard of that product. I know that bagworms are treatable if you do it at the right timing. Once that bag has been as a little bigger and a little thicker, it's hard to penetrate. But if you are spraying for bagworms, you should definitely try to do it early.
Okay, Craig, you're up next with Michelle on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I have, I'm trying to grow two olive trees. They're about 2 feet tall. I had them outside all summer, and I have them inside right now, and I upgraded the potting, I guess, or enlarged the potting and stuff like that. Is there anything I should really know?
I don't know a ton about olives, about overwintering them. I use them a lot in our annual designs or our seasonal displays. I always think about, what those olive trees like in their natural habitat and where they're growing. So I think olive trees don't want a super organic soil mix. I believe they want something with a little bit of sand and a lot of drainage. So I would make sure that you're looking up what kind of potting soil that they would prefer. Especially if you're going to keep them in there long term, that's the best thing that you can do is make sure that you have the correct soil that they want. And then again, just like every other houseplant, you want to keep them watered, you want to keep them in high light, and you want to watch out for those pest and disease issues.
Okay, Craig, thanks for your question. Next, we go to Kathy. Good morning. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I went and bought me one of these Christmas cactus plants, and it didn't have any instructions what I was supposed to do with it after I got it home. Usually they have some sort of a thing in it to tell you how to handle it. So I know cactus usually don't require much watering, but this has a lot of buds. But since I've had it, I've noticed that they have not opened up much either, so I don't know, do I fertilize or do I just leave it alone? So what do I do with a cactus plant?
I wish I could just give you my mom's phone number and you could call her because she loves these things and she has so many of them. She has some that are just ginormous, and she's always making new plants with them and giving them away as gifts. I know they don't need a lot. My mom is not an exceptionally great gardener or horticulturist. No offense, Mom. But I think the key to a lot of succulent type plants or cactusy things is to, not overdo it. They don't want their soil to be really, really wet. And I think they need to dry out a little bit between waterings. Drainage is key. Again, sometimes these Christmas cactuses and Thanksgiving cactuses come with that foil. So making sure we get all of that kind of packaging off, making sure it gets into a pot that has really good drainage. It doesn't want to sit in water. So it doesn't need super high light, but it definitely has a medium light requirement. But they're great plants.
Thanks for the question, Kathy. And that is going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, thanks for coming back. We hope to have you again. Great job.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy hearing your answers, and I'm sure you do as well. Happy holidays from all of us at CAMWEX. I'm Scott Jagow. Stay tuned. Had a very shiny nose.